Hello, everyone. Welcome to a special episode in memorandum. I felt like it would be a look back and a look forth to see what's coming and what's happened and do a bit of discussion about our favorite moments. Tonight with me, I have Husky Wolf, Fisherman Murray.
Hello.
All right. So I feel like what we're going to do is, I didn't plan this out too much. I feel like that's the most raw and natural way to do this. We're going to be starting out episode 1 day or two ago at this point. But we have recorded it all of 15 minutes ago, so it's pretty fresh.
I just want to bring up one thing, which happened around the first episode, that I remembered just after hearing the intro. Remember that one random kind of boogeyman, like, jumped out of the bus, and we just never saw him again?
Favorite character of the entire season. That was my favorite interaction, because I just hate him.
All right, let's get started, though, actually, seriously, at episode 1. With the military cold open. I think we've made it pretty clear throughout the first season that none of us have military experience.
No.
I think that's hopefully been made rather clear by the blasé nature.
Yeah, we like some of the stuff,
yeah,
but we
like
don't.
It's pretty clear.
So.
I think that has a charm to it, I hope. As this very ostentatious and bubbly system of set in a very much not ostentatious or bubbly place.
Yeah, this...
And it's...
Episode 1 was definitely interesting, because we definitely didn't know entirely who our characters would end up being. We had concepts, obviously, but they've changed a lot even since episode 1.
He had a drastic change how I was building him between episode 1... The first couple episodes, it took me a while before he evolved into what he is now. And what was that?
Yeah, you're about 15 hours of play into playing Narc at this point.
Yeah,
so.
After the last episode, I can tell, like, there's definitely some dynamics that have formed that we had definitely not planned, nothing, you know, behind the scenes or anything. It's just Narc is Narc. And Craig is annoyed. And Duke is annoyed at both of us.
Is Duke annoyed? I think that's a very good question. Is Duke ever annoyed?
Disappointed.
Yes.
That one. Disappointed. Yeah,
he's like a sad parent. He's just sad with what you've done.
I'm like a single father.
You're just staring. Craig will always go to Duke to complain about something now. Like, that's just the one person who seems sane.
But let's talk episode 1, how the dynamics were a bit different.
Yes.
Well, to start off with, whenever I started episode 1, I had one idea whenever I built Norik, and that was I wanted him to be a type of person that was constantly being overworked. I figured that he was put in this group of military people to investigate these phenomenons and take care of it for him. So I built him to be super tired all the time, because he has to take care of all this bullshit that doesn't mean anything, that the government's just like, okay, we think this doesn't make sense, go do this for us, even though most of the time it was nothing. And then over time, he doesn't fit that very much anymore.
Yeah, I think we all came in with a certain level of grump and found our own good spots for it. And Norik just has zero grump. He's happy all the time.
Yeah, at the beginning, I was just like, my character's fair in this.
Yeah, and I also think, like, Craig and Duke have gotten a lot more comfortable than even just, like, someone on their first mission together.
Episode 1 shows he's exhausted and hasn't gotten much sleep. And then, like, all the rest of the series, he's just been wide awake, I guess.
Taking ketamine.
I do have to say, I think we see, with him being part of the UIU and his backstory, he almost perfectly exemplifies the canon description of the UIU. They take themselves very seriously, but they seem like a joke externally.
I also feel like...
And it's unintentional.
I think the government just kind of looks for all of the, like, government officers that are just a little off. And they're like, hey, I have a job for you.
Hmm.
And
yeah, it's...
and Norik took that personally, so.
Yeah, I bet Norik loves his job.
Probably. So then, after episode one, I feel like episode one and two we've discussed a bit, because they're very
Yeah, for the most part, we were going into town and talking to people, getting information.
Pretty slow.
It was, yes. That was a big tonal piece I noticed throughout all of...
Well, if...
And character focus.
If I can point something out about episode two, and towards the end of episode one, I remember there was this moment that you were telling us about where there was construction work going on out in the roads. And I remember Craig, he had snuck up to the top of the building, because my character, he basically said, I'm going to be a sacrifice to go get information. And the reason I remember that so vividly, because that was like a pivotal moment for, I think, our characters, like defining what they were, because, mm-hmm. you know, Craig, you know, he, you know, after that moment, you know, I don't know, he continued to fit this military mold, and he became more of like a dependable person in the group, as depicted for himself. And that was kind of the tipping point where, okay, my character could have died here, and I don't know, something snapped or another, and I just started accidentally letting Norik be more Norik from that point on.
Yeah, that actually was...
That was kind of like a...
forgot about that moment while we were talking about it, but that is actually really important, because I remember that was probably even like 5 minutes of RP, like, debating on what we were going to do, because Norik was just gung-ho to go out there, and we were trying to convince him not to. And, like, Craig, all he really wants to do is get the mission done. He relies on his training. He's by the book. And so, seeing Norik, like, going to sacrifice himself, I felt like I had to at least ensure that he wasn't, like, we weren't wasting that opportunity. And so, yeah.
What I also love about that turn is that character, but a concept... Like, the term Norik can be used now, and it would make sense to me.
We should say, the group here, the three of us, play multiple games just besides this with larger and smaller groups. And a turn of phrase has been developed from this series of episodes. I don't know if y'all remember the verb tense, but the one I always remember is Noriking situation. It is picking the most abstract and unintended route of entry or planning.
It's basically just what makes the least sense, but seems like it would work.
Yes. And I think every party has a Norik, and if you don't know who the Norik is, you are the Norik.
I see.
Well, let's move on through for some more episodes.
So that's kind of episodes... Yep. I think episodes 3 and 4 are very interconnected also. They both function... Those are really when the party starts... I think that was another interesting one. Episodes 1 to 2, 3 to 4, and I feel like 5 to 6 all just are perfect pairs of each other. They start an arc and they end an arc. That happens for most of the... a majority until we started recording the episodes slightly differently. I think 4 episodes, actually. We recorded everything in pairs, didn't we?
We at least tried to, yeah.
We stopped, but we were initially trying to record 2 episodes per recording session. We gave up on that because of schedule constraints, but it led to those first couple episodes being very arc-like, where it's, we start.
Yeah, and I hope they don't drag on too long, but it definitely was a lot of character development there. And, like, if you want to get an idea of how the characters do interact, or even... Because that was when we sort of first met each other. And so, in character, things definitely did develop, and out of character, we learned more about our characters. And so, if you do want to see that a bit more naturally, or some of the interactions... maybe just go watch a couple of the, you know, first episodes, but it definitely gave us a lot of time to, like, work on even, like, camp dynamics. Like, I know there was about 2 episodes where we were establishing camp, and just the idea of how we all did that, I would go out and I made, like, I think it was 2 different, like, outposts, sort of, like, secluded positions that I could be in that nobody else could see me from. So essentially a little ghillie position. And I had two of those in the forest. We had the main camp, and I tried to sort of secure the entire forest. And
Duke was like setting up a trap.
That's been episodes 1 through 4. A lot of that was base planning and preparation.
Right, which we probably won't go into a lot for a while, until it becomes important again, but it's a good idea of how, you know, we take those sort of situations.
We're going to see a change in dynamic. When initially the group was a passive observer, you're going to find that
we were heavily unequipped for what we were dealing with.
Yes, I do think that was... I don't know if that was good. I think that might have been a flaw in how we ran the first season.
That kind of change, and it kind of really picked up where we found Taylor and discovered that he was a part of the foundation, and that kind of like set the scene of something's going to probably run into. And it really just picked it up.
I do think that would be good to talk about as we could start talking about episodes 5 and 6. The appearance of Michael Taylor. The best and, I think, one of the best and worst things that's ever happened to the party.
You know, I
enjoyed every second.
I love that our first introduction to Michael Taylor was the party is finally meeting this big mystery man, and before he even really has a chance to say hello and introduce himself, my character is falling out a window behind him.
I think we can define that as the season 1 slump.
Yeah. That was the Norik moment of the season.
That was the slump of action. Because we see, while we'd been ramping up episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and maybe 6, we suddenly see a collapse in the arch as we have Norik getting taken off.
With the missing eye.
And I think... Yes, I think that's set a very odd tone to the first season, because we were ramping up as if something was about to happen. And I can say first season, I had to skip about 4 major encounters that I originally had planned.
I'm sorry about that.
That's not a thing to be sorry about, it just changed how the story fell.
And again, I think it still does work, because, now, the first season, we seem... very helpless, but in reality we're just unprepared. Duke is the only one that entirely kind of knows what's going on.
Until
episode 8.
And so
I know that
I do think that like season 1 to season 2 will be a good shift, just because 1, again, it gave us time to develop our characters, but 2, it just makes sense. I'm part of the military. I was skeptical. I was a hunter. I've been in the forest. I've seen creatures. I've been through experiences. I've been in the military. That's not something that you're really prepared to deal with, and it does make sense that Craig wouldn't really know how to effectively deal with the situation. And Duke only had so much information. Norik is... Norik.
I do want to say Norik has been inordinately prepared, but in all the weirdest ways.
He's not useful. I mean, it's great to have him around. It just feels like he isn't useful.
I'm going to make an odd shot call. The cooperation between Taylor and Norik, story-driving features.
It is the one reason I have shut my mouth at certain points. Obviously... At the very end, I had some things that shut me up, but Taylor would be the one to, like, agree with Norik, and at that point, I couldn't really say anything.
I love how...
Because it's...
I love...
Yeah, we just have these moments where the two just... Everyone else is like, oh no, that's insane. Taylor just looks at Norik.
Yeah.
You're right. He is right here. I state this guy is correct.
I feel like
Taylor was kind of like the adult figure. Where it's like, if anything happens, you just look at him, and if he shakes his head yes, it's like, okay, we're good.
That, he unintentionally has just parental vibes.
Yeah, he does, because even just when I met him, skipping ahead a bit for sure. Oh, wait, no. A little bit. But when I met up with Taylor,
we were just about there.
He was getting some gear together, and I tend to, like, ID people, ID groups, and things like that, so I'm looking for badges, looking for even serial numbers on the gun, and there were definitely some red flags. But he did genuinely
that,
win me over.
I think that is something we should... We should talk about that. How many times in season one has Craig been refused identification in one way or another?
Just think a good amount of times.
I think I remember three or four. I'd be interested if someone could send us a message at the podcast email address. If you can figure out exactly how many different times that's occurred, that'd be kind of interesting to see.
I like how I think I somehow get the...
It's a running trope that that we have Craig, like, can I see your identification?
No.
Then they just walk around him to Riker, and it's like, here.
Yeah, something I just want to point out, this goes back all the way to episode one. My character pretty much got away this whole season without having to use identification, because in the first episode, I don't know if y'all remember, but he pulled out, like, a ripped-up driver's license that was so mangled, I don't think even if they looked at it, they could have recognized how much of it was...
Yep.
I also love that, like, once Nort got his lab coat stolen, because whenever he met Taylor, we didn't really go over this, but Taylor ended up putting Nort upstairs. and so...
I think that was pretty heavily implied with the line, yeah, he's in the back room. I've got him tied up in the back room.
I was tied up in the back room. That wasn't
I do remember. I told Norik to go and scout, and he was like, yeah, okay. And I told him to mark the door, so he puts his lab coat on the tree and walks inside. So he got his lab coat stolen, and he got, you know, kidnapped.
I also kind of like how...
We should mention that. We should mention the lab coat theft. That was a beautiful moment. Because if... I didn't really ever spell it out, I don't think, in an episode, but I have a running document sheet where I take notes about what's happening in the podcast. And there's a line in that note sheet that just says, Norik's lab coat. Then in parentheses next to it, the words, missing.
I know a bit that you told me, but I'll leave that out for now.
At some point, that lab coat will come back.
One of the things I'm very worried about is whoever did take the lab coat, whoever has my journal, that could probably...
Yeah, outstanding. That, I think, is the best part of this. No clue who stole it. None of you have an idea. No one saw a thing. It just...
Basically, the construction workers is the only lead.
Something I want to remind y'all from the first episode, I don't know if y'all even remember this, but I took sketches of the entire camp we started at, our van, and all of us. I put sketches of all of us in there, so they could just identify us based off the art I drew.
Yep. That's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the journal also shows you as a documented psychopath. Just like writing the fall over and over and over again in it.
The first 12 pages are false, so they didn't look at it for a long time. They're like, wait, he drew things. Oh, this is useful. I thought this man was just crazy.
I think we should move on to the third, the hospital visit.
Oh,
no.
Let's take a peek at how long. So episode 8 was when you first were in the hospital. No, episode 7, actually. And from 7 to 9... And that is one of the slowest parts of season one. I still think one of my favorites.
There's,
One
of my favorite scenes is definitely in the hospital, where Norik, with broken legs, just like roundhouse kicks a wooden door off its hinges.
I would more mention bureaucratic hell as one of my favorites. So I should let in on the audience. This is a common trope for whenever I DM.
Me, I've been hit with this.
Failed bureaucracy rolls.
Every time.
Yes, he is constantly up at this any game we're playing. Because for some reason he keeps choosing to make bureaucracy rules.
It's useful.
Basically, what I'll do, there is a tone of voice that is activated whenever you hit a bad bureaucratic agent.
Oh no.
Hello, sir.
At a certain point, in this campaign or the other one, I'm going to hear that voice and just hang up. Or just be like, screw you, Trudy, and just, no.
I have an active headcanon that this is all the same bureaucratic officer that is just going everywhere.
Her name is Trudy, and she follows me everywhere.
Funnily enough, in the other campaign we're in, that's the exact one that I succeeded in. I had like a 10% chance of succeeding the role, but just because she was there, you know, I just passed it whenever it was the one.
Yes, Trudy is evil to one of my players, and really nice to the other one. But of course, Trudy has a different... Ah, yes, sir. Let's see if we can...
She puts on a fake British accent when she hears the cowboy.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah.
Enough of that, though. Let's keep moving on. So, after busting his way out of the hospital, I think I'm going to breeze over. Yeah.
They got out eventually.
Episode 10.
After they Nord got out of broke into the
Let's
basement.
Leave it at that. Episode 10, Exploration. I think this is one of my favorite turns of the series, because before then we were trying to be super serious. We said screw it at this point. Or
yeah, there's still some seriousness, but
realizing
it was too much.
Could I mention, at the end of episode 9 at least, I remember Husky got so... worried that my character was going off the hinges, that he handcuffed my character, and then episode 10 starts.
Yep. It was episode 11, I think.
Taylor comes out.
But yeah.
Well, yeah. Whatever episode, Taylor comes out and immediately unhandcuffs me, and I just love that Husky. You know, he was at that point. He was so nervous about me. Another character comes in. Now it'll be fine. Let's unhandcuff him. Let's get to work now.
Yeah.
Again, it is the Taylor energy. He just understands he can exert force over the party, just like hand wave and stop something.
I think around 10 or 11, I can't remember, somewhere around mentions about, I can't remember what it was. It was something like, he was asking what, it's like, oh, what happened to me? And Taylor was like, oh, you're talking about, like, oh, when you were in our building and you jumped out the window or whatever, and that he didn't think about, like, Nork didn't think about, wait a minute, oh yeah, why was I in that building?
He actually was,
didn't question it?
Amnestized, I do believe. He was specifically memory wiped.
Yes, but Taylor mentioned that it was when he had him in the back room.
Again, it is Taylor energy. He is an operator of the umpteenth class. Operator Shadow Walker deploys into areas, and I do want to say that is his actual operating alias, official canon lore bit here. Michael Taylor, alias Shadow Walker, he's a third rank field agent for the SCP Foundation.
I just laid back when I heard that, like, is he not gonna say it?
Oh, speaking about Taylor.
Why don't I remember it? It's like,
it is his energy. It just constantly gets away with that.
He just exudes like confidence and professionalism. So I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, he seems like he knows
Taylor,
what he's doing.
I think that around episode like maybe 12 and especially like 13, you know, we started to get along a little bit better after I accepted that this guy isn't a tour guide. He's actually, you know, useful. And this whole episode and these episodes, it looks like, not like we're gonna become friends, but, you know, like, I'm beginning to trust him and everything. And then at the very end of everything, it's revealed when I'm talking to the guy, I think he's acting like that just to trick me. I think he's working with the nurse.
God, that was so good.
I think of the clip from The Office where Jim's just deadpan looking through the... the blinds,
yeah.
And that's his face. It's just...
Oh.
I just like how on the... Like, that big rant about telling the story of what happened, it all was just kind of, like, wrapped up to explain how he was kind of butthurt about Taylor. It's like, and I think he's trying to pull the wool over my eyes. And that's the conclusion.
And, like, it almost sounded like Nork didn't think that was, like, some really weird explanation. He was just like, oh yeah, I broke my legs. And they told me I wouldn't be able to walk for 3 months. And now here I am.
We should also... I do think that is another moment as we're coming to the end. Episodes 10, 11, 12, and 13 all follow pretty... I think episode 13 is the most interesting of the four.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think we should mention how many shots were fired over the entire duration of season one.
I think we counted it last time. One.
One round of ammunition.
By me.
Yeah.
Yes.
I should get some sort of bonus for that.
You got a bonus for it.
I can't believe the entire time one bullet.
One round of ammunition. The episode 13. I think we need to discuss that, then talk it some. So episode 13.
Started with us in the library, which is not above ground. Yeah.
Maybe
so
it is.
I guess we'll start from sort of when we got in there quickly, because Taylor sort of led us through this underground structure that we found, and eventually we found this group of monsters? We'll call them monsters. One of them...
Creatures.
Okay, yeah.
Creatures.
One of them had one eye and needle arms, and...
All of them had one eye
wonderful.
And needle arms came out of his fingers. We should be very specific.
Okay. But...
Personal headcanon is that Grognak has a giant monocle attached to his central eye. I like that image in my head. And when he gets angry, it falls out.
Oh, I hope to see that soon.
No, I don't think
but,
I will.
He ends up... One of them ends up jabbing Norik with their needle fingers.
That
right.
Was
Craig
that
was very upset and freaked out about the entire situation. Not to mention, there were multiple times where we took staircases up, which should have led us above ground. Anyway, Norik is on the ground. They jab him with something. I freak out, and they tell me that he's just going to be fine. In a couple hours, he'll be able to walk.
The back to the hits of the strange.
Yeah. During this, Craig just kind of shut down. Because he's military, and this is weird.
I feel like Craig is just having... There's like two different ways I can see this in my head. Either every episode after episode two is Craig having a mental breakdown because of how boring the mission is, and all of this is just fantasy in his head.
That's...
And it does turn out Norik is, in fact... A tired office worker.
He is genuinely trying to convince himself of all of that. Like, I made the joke of it in the 13th episode that, like, I just think this is a dream that'll make this all a lot easier. I kind of got, like, flipped upside down with gravity. And so, I think at this point, that's just how he sees the supernatural. He's like, I'm dreaming. Dreaming, it's okay, I'll wake up. I just have to go through my dream.
I really like that.
I think that is an interesting way to view this. That is an interesting aspect. Is this all a dream? Who knows?
I really like the idea that just going back to that idea y'all are going off of, like Craig, he wakes up in a tent and he walks out and I'm like, and it's the old Norik. And he's like, Norik, you are not going to believe the dream I just had. And he sits down, he tells the old Norik about all this, and Norik just sitting there sipping a cup of coffee. I'm sorry. What the fuck did you just... What?
We come to the end of the series, and Norik's just sitting there, cup of coffee in hand. And wait, no. It's a cup of black coffee, and he's like, "You thought I like sweets? You idiot!"
Turns out Craig's just been projecting onto Norik this whole time, and he's been in a coma.
Oh man.
That's the ending of the series. Not anything else I have planned. It's just. And it was all a dream. That's stupid. I do want to say, everyone, that is not how. I may not have all this stuff in between planned yet, but I do know how this story. Watch out, we got some fun stuff coming.
Let's see,
on that note, we're going to go to a bullet round real quick.
Okay.
I'm going to call it, I've got two or three questions for the group, and I just want to hear your opinions.
Okay.
We're going to start with Husky, then we're favorite character of the season. Go.
I think it has Norik.
Norik, alright. Now, short
term, why? Well, I mean, I would not have laughed as much without Norik in here. He has brought a lot to the podcast, for sure. Just in the dynamic of the group.
But to be there would have been 100% less hospital. Alright, now on to Fish. Favorite character of the season. Who and why?
My favorite pick, I mean, their pick, but I... you know, I'm probably going to go just because he had to put up with all of our bullshit. And he, I don't know, he's a foundation worker, but still, we were quite a group. And you, I think mm-hmm. you played him very well.
It's the type of character I play most, I think, whenever I get a chance to play anything, which has been a solid 3 years now.
Definitely a good NPC. Nice, grounded, reasonable character.
He gets what's going on. It's the guy who knows. Yeah. He's the mentor. It's I love them so much. But I feel like I've talked enough.
After hearing those two, I was thinking, like, I can't decide between Taylor and Norik. And I was like, I think I just like about both of them because, like, the duality, like the yin and yang of they're just complete opposites. Like, one seems kind of silly and kind of crazy the entire time, and the other one, no matter what, kind of like dead faced. So I like just like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
That's the other thing. He's the one person that can translate Norik's ramblings.
He translates everything. That's our first favorite encounters. Just name the encounter and move on. We're going to start with Husky first.
I said it before, man in the forest. I hate the man.
All right. No explanation needed. Next, Fish, favorite encounter.
Okay, look, every one of my encounters where I get immediately rejected is just one of my favorite parts because it's always, I don't care if it's the guy in the woods or if it's the nurse, I'm like, hey, you look pretty good, and immediately, out of here, they immediately reject Norik.
Run.
Which is funny because, as I said back before I lost my character lost his eye, his appearance used to be beautiful. And still, I guess when I was talking to the nurse, he turned attractive because his eye was out, but I just find that hilarious.
Rhino, favorite encounter?
My favorite encounter is probably where I jumped out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how often those two are just coming up throughout this entire episode.
Yeah.
Definitely my second favorite.
But I think we've set a pretty good panel of what season one was.
Oh, do we want to mention what happened at the very end of episode 13 then?
No, not really. What? I think we'll talk about that at the start of episode 14.
Well, you mean season two.
What I
want to
say though is, yes, true. But it is still Marcus episode 14. The first episode of season two, I do want to say, everyone, please stick around and listen. We've got some fun stuff coming. Thank you all for listening to our first season of the SCP Black Files podcast. I've been your host, The Administrator, and this has been my party. Husky Wolf, Fisherman Murray, and Bat Rhino. We are produced under a CC BY SA 4.0 license. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter at PodCrooked and on Spotify, Anchor, and most other podcasting platforms. Episode 1 of Season 2 will be released tomorrow. Thank you all for listening.